On this week's episode of Mind the Gap, we have two guests from Cadent Gas, a company at the forefront of providing energy to homes across the UK. First up, we have Gary Hawkins, Head of Streetworks and Reinstatement for London. With 18 years in the industry, Gary's seen it all when it comes to the impact of roadworks, especially for those with accessibility needs. He's here to share his insights on how we design and execute streetworks in a more inclusive way. We're also joined by Phil Burrows, Head of Customer Vulnerability. Phil leads Cadent's efforts in tackling fuel poverty and carbon monoxide safety, overseeing a vast network of support projects and centres for warmth. He'll discuss the challenges faced by vulnerable communities and how Cadent is working to create fairer opportunities for everyone. Join us for a conversation about the vital work happening behind the scenes to keep our communities connected, safe and warm. Let's dive in. So I'm going to start by asking a question around diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. What you feel that means to you as an individual and what it means to you within your industry as well.
It's a myriad of things. I think people look at the obvious things when we're talking about inclusion and diversity, but for me it's about, you know, diversity of ideas, diversity of age, backgrounds, ethnicities, and everything comes into it. And I guess it's about being able to respect and listen to everybody's view across your team, across the organisation. That will be different to yours, but actually no less valuable. So it's about understanding everybody's coming at something from a different point of view because of their background, because of their age, because of their ethnicity, because of their gender, but actually none of it is any less valuable in terms of opinion than anyone else's.
Nice. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I think for me, coming from a diverse background in West London, having that opportunity to grow up around different people, different environments, different religions is the most important thing in terms of what we do and how we do it. I think education, particularly within Cadent, needs to improve in terms of this. And I think people like myself and you, Phil, we're at the heart of that in terms of changing that dynamic and that focus. When I walked into Cadent 10 years ago, everybody looked like me. And that is a great thing. But, you know, now with the way things are developed, well, thank you for that. I am married. Sorry, mate. But it's exciting to see how it's changing for the better. Yeah. And I think with all the initiatives within Cadent and outside of Cadent, it's so important now that we get this right and obviously use people's experiences for the better.
I think it's certainly, I agree, I think it's certainly got tons better, certainly from a central point of view. I can't comment as much in the networks necessarily, but certainly there's so many different people working in and around, you know, the central functions. And it's brilliant. It's refreshing. It's absolutely amazing to hear just what angle people come from and how they get to a different opinion than you. It's really refreshing.
Well, that's it, isn't it? When you're solving problems as well, you need as many diverse thinkers in the room as you can, because otherwise you all come up with the same solution.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just on that then, have there been any particular initiatives that you've been involved in that you felt have really made an impact on the business, or is there any that you're maybe not involved in but you've seen within the business that?
I personally, Cadent are really challenging themselves around what they need to be doing. But I think from my perspective, the stuff that we do around streetworks and compliance and safety and accessibility around streetworks, that's probably the most important thing that we've done, I think, in terms of developing an app that everybody can use in terms of operatives, engaging with people. But also, we did some videos with various charities to give them a view of what it's like to negotiate a site, and using that opportunity to educate people, that's probably, it's probably the best thing I've ever done, to be honest with you, in terms of that. I'm very fortunate, as we all are sitting in this room, that we have the opportunity to negotiate, you know, different scenarios. But I think what we said when we did some presentations a few years ago is that we build stuff for 90% of the population and not 10%. And if we flip it on our head, then we've got 100% buy-in then. So for me, that's probably the most important thing for me.
Yeah. And I suppose your role sort of covers that every day,
really.
I mean, the sort of stuff I'm involved in supporting customers in vulnerable situations, you know, poverty and fuel poverty doesn't discriminate on ethnicity, on gender, on you know, background, religion, whatever. But I think what it has allowed the team to do who goes into the communities is to really go out and understand what it's like for people we're supporting and sort of walk a step in their shoes. And I think that's been hugely humbling for me as well. And especially when you go out to certain communities where religious reasons mean that the men and the women stay separate, for example, in one of the centres for warmth. It's having a real understanding and respecting of that and understanding why, rather than having a preconceived idea before you go there. So I'm sure if you speak to any of the team who've been involved in the sort of VCMA vulnerability projects, they'll all tell you the same. It's been and real education culturally and in terms of inclusion and diversity in meeting the communities we serve across our network, you know, the different languages, the different sets of people, the different views, whether, you know, in the northern parts of the patch or the southern parts, everything's different, and it's respecting that and working together to help make everybody's, you know, life in our networks that a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing we probably didn't do a few years ago is learn from communities. So in particularly around Streetworks, we have various different sort of locations in London where things need to be done differently. You know, for example, you know, in the Jewish community, we have the Friday for the Sabbath. We shouldn't be working there. And by speaking to the local communities, you get more of an understanding. We did a project in East London a few years ago, and that was the first site where I think we'd actually changed the actual text to, I can't remember the text it was in, but it wasn't in English. And it, we actually sort of centred that around the local community to engage with them more in terms of the street works we were doing. So yeah, I think we're learning all the time, to be honest with you, but there's more you can do in terms of outreach to the communities and learn more about the local communities.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot with organisations as well within my role. So for example, RAD, Royal Association for the Deaf, and it's interesting, they guide and educate us on how we talk to the deaf community. It's really interesting. That if somebody, you know, if somebody's given, if you give somebody who's deaf a letter that's written down, you just expect them to be able to read it. Well, if you've been deaf all your life, you've never been taught to read. Whereas it's just little tidbits like that that get you thinking and appreciating the differences across our industry, across our society and cultures.
And do you feel like your customer expectations are influencing like the diversity and inclusivity initiatives within the business?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there's an expectation that organisations should be able to reach everybody. Yeah. And I think we look at how we can reach everybody. And it's really difficult. It's not easy. And we I don't think, you know, all the projects I look after, we've mastered it. But I do think, you know, communities we go into are expecting us to be able to understand what makes them tick and how they work and how they go about their business. So without question, it's influencing what we do as a business.
And I suppose that is then in turn influencing like those individuals that may never have considered coming into the utilities industry. It's showing them that actually it is a diverse sector. It's not, you know, the middle-aged white man that it used to be. Yeah.
Well, you're naturally leaving your mark, aren't you, in the community? You go in there and you know, you want to be welcomed by your presence. And if people see an organisation that is trying to reach everybody, trying to reach its community across all our networks, naturally you're going to leave a legacy where their kids or they think, well, you know what, that's a good organisation to go and work for, and you attract talent. And there's huge talent in all communities, be it, you know, deprived or other, that should all be given an opportunity to work at an organisation like ours.
And on that note, so obviously I know you've done a lot of work recently, actually, with Skewed Climate on the Transport for London, Travelling Responsibly. Are there any initiatives that you're working on within schools to sort of educate kids on the sector? And maybe not necessarily the main aim of them to bring people in, but kind of are going to assist that skills gap that we've potentially got in the future?
Yeah, I think the Minecraft stuff really helps. And once it sort of hits the ground running, that gives us a natural in. We've done some other sort of initiatives locally with local communities and whatnot. I think the challenge we have is getting into certain communities where the perception is that they go into different types of employment. So particularly in London, probably for us, then probably needs to be more of a focus around getting into the areas. And luckily we have Mary O'Shaughnessy who can identify these opportunities and get in there. I think for us, it's probably more about application and actually committing to doing something. I mean, sometimes, you know, we have everything set up to go and we just need that extra push to get it where it needs to be. But in terms of the initiatives, there's loads going on. I just think it just needs a bit more application and maybe something creative as well. I think Minecraft will help, and with the development we're doing with you guys around, you know, other stuff, that will really, really help, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on the Minecraft stuff. We do loads of education programs. We will be in 40,000. We'll reach 40,000 school children this year. And all of this is, whilst it's not explicitly talking about a career, it's setting a it's setting the tone and giving people an in into what Cadent looks like. And it's just that, you know, for want of a better phrase, it's about the branding, isn't it? So people think about Cadent. So people think about Cadent as a viable career opportunity. Do loads around work experience. The business is really positive about doing that now. Again, so people are coming in 15, 16, 17, 18, depending where they are, and looking at the business as a real career choice when you talk about all the amazing programs we've got and the future leaders programs and everything like that. And working within communities and being present, it's just about that. God, I want to know more about Cadent. Or those guys who knocked on my door, they were really friendly, or the school program was really good, or, you know, my son enjoyed it, or whatever. It's that thought process around Cadent as an option, because a lot of people, unless you've experienced what Cadent do through street works or through gas leak at your home or whatever, not necessarily know who we are. However, what we do find, certainly in the work we do, is once you've exposed the customer to Cadent, it's like, oh yeah, I keep seeing your vans on the road. I didn't know you were that big. It's brilliant. You're everywhere. And it is that making people think of Cadent as a really viable career opportunity, because it is. It's a brilliant organisation to work for.
And this is something we talked about a bit in season one, is that I think utilities used to be an industry, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this, you know, where you came in as a friend of or a family member. So you weren't going to get that diversity because people were coming in from the same communities, from the same families. Obviously amazing, it's a great sector to work in, it's a safe sector, people, you know, have had incredible careers out of that. But by getting out there and seeing, you know, being seen, you do get to draw different people in, don't you?
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question, funnily enough.
Okay, right, so that's a first.
I was thinking on the way up here, Cadent have a massive challenge. We've been into a couple of schools a few times, and the narrative from children now is to go into the more of the social media influencer side of things because of what they see.
Yeah.
So how do we change that, I guess? You're going to an engineering company where historically everyone digs holes.
Yeah.
And that's the perception of Cadent in the utility sector. Everyone gets dirty, everyone goes home in mucky boots. But now, we went into a school, I think about a month ago, and we spoke to a couple of the kids and they said, influencer. And I ain't got a clue what that is. you know, so I guess the challenge for Cadent is, how do we become more innovative to make it more sellable against the most popular things? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's about showing, showcasing what's out there, isn't it? I think, like, as part of Skewed Climate, we get that because we are doing something quite different. So it is quite refreshing to be able to say, look, you can come and do game development in the utilities industry. It's not something that people associate. They don't associate those two things. So I think some of it is around making them aware that it isn't just the digging holes. Yeah, you can do that if that's what you fancy, but there's so many other opportunities out there. I could speak for days on the influencer thing, which I won't.
But I think, though, when I started in the business, albeit a very different business, over 30 years ago, digging holes. I've probably worked in 5-6 different departments and done 10 or 12 different jobs. What sort of organisation where you can go in at 16, 18, start with one career and just naturally move through finance, procurement, operations, you know, all the back office functions, legal, you know, treasury. There's 10 different careers, you know, 20 different careers within one organisation, and it is selling that point. It is selling that actually you go work the utilities isn't just about digging up roads. There's a million and one careers you can have within the organisation. And development and personal growth is huge. It's there for everyone to see.
And it's the brand piece, isn't it? Like you say, it's like they're talking about what the options are, I think. Because, everyone now wants to be an influencer.
Or a footballer. Yeah. Some stat, wasn't it?
I can't do that. And I go on Instagram without saying I'm out there.
So do you think, like, just coming on to that, I suppose it ties in nicely, do you think technology is going to play a role in kind of enhancing and advancing diversity and inclusion? If we look at it from a, you know, job perspective, what's there, like?
Yes. So in terms of diversity of role, do you mean? Which naturally, if the more diverse roles you've got, the more diverse group of people you're going to attract naturally anyway. I mean, the business has launched Operations 4.0, isn't it? Which is a whole look at technologies and how we do things. Some massively exciting things going on. And I think, you know, you talk about the role of an influencer. That job probably wasn't even around 6 or 8 years ago. Now it's a viable career. So the whole Ops 4.0 space, how much of that how much is there's roles there that probably aren't even around yet. The technology hasn't been thought through, and that's really exciting. You know, that could be 10, 12 years off. So absolutely, technology plays a key role. By doing things better, smarter, by being able to do things more innovatively, you are naturally going to attract different people and to who we already have within the organisation. So yeah, technology has a huge part to play. Yeah, who knows what roles we'll be talking about in 10 years' time.
That's the exciting thing though, isn't it, I think? Because there is so much opportunity. Yeah, it could be anything.
Yeah, could be anything.
Could be the next influencer.
Yeah. You never know, I think in terms of the innovation stuff, so there's the stuff that we have around the industry, particularly around streetworks and pipe replacement, you're absolutely right. It looks so much more fun than standing there and chucking down a rake.
Yeah.
Honestly, the stuff particularly around ULC, the CISBOT stuff, where we have the camera that drives up the main and seals the main internally, you'd be amazed how many people are more interested in that than the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
And the products that are coming through the industry in terms of, you know, pipe replacement, you know, barrier systems, lights and all that, it is quite techy now. And that's where, from our side of things, the streetwork side of things, that's definitely changing. And you're bringing different people in now. I think sort of 8, 9, 10 years ago, I've been doing this for 20 years, and it's typically always been about, you know, us against the councils. Mm. And now things are tightening up a little bit in terms of the engagement because of the innovation that we're using. We're actually bringing more people to the table to engage with us as a utility sector because of the really good stuff that we're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it will help.
Do you think it could hinder, though, as well? So just talking about, like, that diversity of role, obviously you've got things like the tech-based roles, but then you have got the guys that are on the ground digging the holes. Do you think the expectation on those guys to start using tech more can cause problems? Not necessarily cause problems, but become harder because you've not gone into that role assuming you'd need to use tech. You've gone into that maybe because, you know, you're a hands-on type person. So do you think that plays... It has that possibility of.
I mean, it's more your field of mine, but I can relate back to when I did exactly the role you're talking about. Yeah, it's going to be challenging, but it also doesn't mean they can't do it because they weren't brought on to do that. You know, and I think that's about, you know, it's about self development and personal progress and personal growth. Every time any sort of transformation thing came in, I remember when we first had the laptops came in, everyone was like, oh, you can't possibly use a laptop, and I'm sure enough we use laptops, and the system QB5 came in. So there's always been challenges. It probably feels it's moving at a quicker pace than it has done previously, and I think life generally, and technology generally in life, is doing so. So there are people who will struggle, and the business has to make sure that there's a suitable way for those people to be brought on the journey. But as much as there's a chance that they will be left behind, there's also an equal chance that they'll be more than capable of adapting to new technologies and new change. So we just got to do it together. You've got to do it collaboratively, and you know, it will happen. You cannot slow progress.
You can't. And I suppose it comes back to, doesn't it? And again, I think from a sort of a skewed climate point of view, but it's making sure you've got the framework in there to help people learn in the way they learn.
Yeah,
and not just assuming that everyone learns in the same way.
It's a beautiful segue to the whole Minecraft thing, isn't it? You know, how people learn. People are learning through Minecraft, who typically may have been left behind in a classroom because their brain thinks differently. And I think as a society, and definitely as an organisation, we're far more clued up on the different learning styles and stuff like the Minecraft units and educating through that way, you know, is incredible, because there's people who will learn that way better than a teacher stood there. So you're absolutely right. I don't know if that's a deliberate segue, but it worked very well.
Thank you.
No, but I know from personal experience, I'm not someone that learns when I listen. So I don't take, that sounds bad, doesn't it? But if I'm listening to a podcast, for example, I have really struggled to digest the information. I have to read. I could easily get left behind because of that, because a lot of things are moving into that kind of video, or, you know, exactly what we've got set up, audio visual, whereas I know that I will struggle to learn from that. So it's having all of that available for all the people as we move at pace, I think, is so important.
I think as well, going back to your point, it's identifying the people and where they're struggling.
Yeah.
So neurodiversity, for example, you'll have people that don't want to divulge it who do the same job, and then you've got that reluctance to then move forward, and then that person potentially becomes difficult because, you know, they're not letting it out in the open, essentially. And you're right in what you were saying. So I was talking to my brother-in-law, actually, who works within the unions, and there is a huge reluctance within the sort of shipping industry. They're starting to field people out of that industry because it's now going to a more innovative way of working. And I sort of challenged them on it, and I said, you know, the management have to support what they're doing in terms of giving them that opportunity. Yeah. And I think we use Cube Opus in London. I think, and I'm being honest, there was a real reluctance to use another system, particularly around supervision. But for me, it's probably, if it's applied in a certain way that everyone gets their opinion across, then it's more successful. I think people are scared of change, naturally.
Yeah.
But if you can see the benefits, I mean, why would you dig a hole with a shovel when you've got a hydraulic JCB sitting next to you? And and if you can't get yourself to that point where you see the benefit, then that's going to be the challenge. But I think promotion, engagement, ahead of that is probably the most important thing for us to do.
Yeah, knowing you're going to be taken on the journey rather than just...
And be a part of it, you know. I mean, sometimes we throw stuff, you know, in and expect people just to deal with it. And I think that's probably... We need to get past that a little bit, don't we?
You know, agreed.
It's here for a reason. Help us get to that point.
What do you see any emerging trends happening, shaping the future of the industry when it comes to, like, this, I suppose the skills gap is the broader question, but again, with that kind of inclusion, inclusivity and diversity lens as well, like, is there trends within the industry, or do you feel like there's certain things that you guys see at Cadent that are moving quicker than other areas?
I always struggle with the skills gap thing. Are you, for me, how do I explain this? It's, I left school at 16 with not much in terms of qualification, and we've done all right to this point. I think there's that 15 to sort of 17 year old sort of period. The application and the recruitment processes need to change in terms of how we get people in. We were swimming in graduates, you know, for years, and you know, a graduate coming out of university, for me, and apologies, graduates. some of them didn't have the common sense that someone would just coming out of school, and sometimes common sense is more important than what's written down on a piece of paper. So I think that engagement around a skills gap is that needs filling and that needs sort of adjusting, I think. And you see a lot of adverts now on LinkedIn, for example, they don't specify university and college degrees anymore. It's about your ability.
Yeah.
You know, I can't write my talent down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Because it isn't a qualification. I shouldn't say pushing, but but you know, that's how I see it.
I think the business has changed its sort of approach to what was historically called the grad program and its future leaders. And I think there's a lot of avenues now into that program other than the conventional graduate route. And I'm no expert in recruitment by any stretch, but I guess there's a myriad of reasons there. Obviously people, you know, certainly from underprivileged backgrounds can't afford to go to university.
Yeah.
So there has to, you know, and there's an awful lot of really, really good people, really capable, competent people who a grad program naturally misses out. So actually there's multiple avenues into the business now, into Cadent, which is only a good thing because you are getting lots of diversity in thought, in age, in experience, in background and everything that goes with it. And it really is important to accept and recognise that somebody with a degree doesn't necessarily make for somebody that hasn't got a degree because they've not had the exposure to it or the potential. And I think, you know, it's something I always say is, you know, don't confuse intelligence with education. And somebody who's had a greater opportunity to education doesn't necessarily mean they're more or less intelligent and capable than somebody who hasn't.
Yeah.
We're all a victim of our own circumstance and upbringing, be that good or be that less favourable.
Agreed. I could definitely agree with that. So just something that I would like to just go back and touch on, because we were chatting about this before we started recording, was, so you guys in the streetworks industry are working with, I think you said it was...
We're trying, influencer,
the
buzzword at this meeting.
Influencer. And then there was another company that you're working with to make sure that your streetwork sites are much more inclusive.
Yeah, I think so the work we've done around accessibility, around streetworks, it's got to a point now. The one thing we haven't dipped our toe in yet is the lived experience. So we're working with a lady called Seema Flower, who's got 2% vision. So she's coming in to do some stuff around, you know, her lived experience, some education around, you know, accessibility. She's going to come and walk a few sites with us. So she's very, very excited to work with us on that. The other lady, I'm meeting her tomorrow. She sounds amazing. Jenny Berry, her name is. And I think she was paralyzed at 28. So she's 33 now. And we want to do some social media comms on it. We want to do a basic standard guiding video for the whole country. You know, almost like, you know, Jenny turns up on site. Mm. These are the challenges, you know, have her spin on it as well, because she's got a lot of followers on TikTok, I believe. And then we'll just go from there. But it's, yeah, massively important. We love it.
It really, comes really back to it. That thing that we said at the beginning, though, isn't it? If you put the same minds in a room, you're going to come up with the same solution. If it would be like the three of us discussing a site that needs wheelchair access when we've got no lived-in experience. Mm-hmm. Like, you need those people in the room, right? You can't make decisions for them. Mm. And I think, yeah, that it can only... good can only come of that, right?
Yeah. We had a conversation on Thursday, so we do a lot of work with a charity blinding business. We have work experience kids coming in every year, and it was hilarious. I'll be honest with you. We had two children in 2 years ago, both visually impaired. I left them there because I didn't realise I had to walk them back to the station. And honestly, and the assumptions that I made throughout that week, it was so frightening, because you were making assumptions based on level of, level of vision, you know, the ability to walk to a shop, you know. And essentially what we did was we isolated them kids for the week.
Yeah.
We put them downstairs in an office because we didn't want to use the stairs. And at the end of the week, we had the directors in from London, and they blew our minds with their questions. And the feedback was so important to learn about the mistakes we've made. And we got a student starting from iGEM, I think, on work experience for 2 months, coming in. She's working in John Batson's team, the innovation team. So there was a little bit of panic on Thursday in terms of, like, what do we do? And the one thing they're asking me, ask the person who's coming in, you know, have the conversation, you know, screen readers, do you think they'll need it? Ask, you know, clearing spaces, ask. And I think it's really exciting that we're now brave enough to, you know, to do that. Reasonable adjustments has got a bit of a way to go, particularly around IT. But yeah, it's stuff like that that's important for me, I believe.
I think we work with a lot of organisations, and I think the Scope and RAD and various deaf organisations, and I think the learning I've taken from all of this is, it's all right to ask and be ignorant, because your ignorance isn't coming from a bad place. Yeah. It's just you've not had exposure to it. So you're absolutely right. You know, if people are coming in and they need, I went to Scope Awards, and they were talking about organisations making reasonable adjustments, and I can forget the gentleman's name. He's the chair of Scope. He's a famous record producer, but he's lost his sight, and he said, no, we want employees to make all adjustments, reasonable or other. And he said, there's 10 million people living with a disability in the UK. Why would we not? And it's right.
Yeah.
It isn't about reasonable, just reason. You know, it's about, no, you'll make all adjustments so that person can execute their role just as well as somebody who's totally able-bodied. So I think, the key to all this is ask. Because you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, rather than assume, just ask the question. Because most people will be very, very grateful and be delighted to tell you exactly what they need in order to do their role.
Mm. And it's quite disappointing, really, isn't it, that being asked is the bar is that low that people are pleasantly surprised
definitely. And it's perception as well. You talked about, you know, being inclusive and, you know, welcoming people into a business like ours. How you set things up at the very, very start and the questions you ask, automatically you walk into that company thinking, this will do, you know, for a good few years. And I think that's where we're getting better at, I think. And that's, you know, there's still work to go on it, I think.
Starts right at the beginning, doesn't it, when you apply for that role?
Definitely.
Well, it starts before that, because you need to know that you can apply for that role and are likely to get it, don't you? Like, that it's not going to become the reason.
And the business do that. So if you're interviewing and somebody has, you know, a particular neurodiversity support, or they need additional support, they might get the questions half an hour before, or they might get them, you know, a reasonable break. These things are all like, they're nothing to execute for the interviewer, but they get the most out of the interviewee. So the business is desperately trying to do what's right, and I think it's broadly doing a good job of it. There's still lots to go, but that will always be the case, because it's an ever-evolving landscape. But just the fact that you're thinking about that as an interviewer is progress, because you wouldn't have thought about it, you know, five years, a decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, final question that we ask all our interviewees. What advice would you give your younger self considering a career in the utility industry?
Gosh, that is...
Take your time.
That is a good question, and I've often pondered this. And for somebody who, you know, very similar by the sounds of it, our career journeys, that, you know, I left school with not a great deal of qualifications, but with a burning desire to prove myself once I got into employment. So going through through the various, you know, levels and roles within Cadent, I thought it's always given me a good grounding. And I wonder whether I'd gone the education route and gone through university, whether I would have had that desire and where I'd be now in a parallel career. So I know that doesn't really answer your question, but the advice I'd give myself is probably to do what you've done already, because it stood you in good stead. But I think as you kind of grow in the business and you get bigger roles and more senior roles, the simple advice is surround yourself with people who know more than you do, because yeah. you will always do well, because listen to people who know more than you do about different things, and never be too egotistical not to listen, because I've made a relatively successful career of having amazing people work alongside me who are better than me at a lot of things.
Mm. Excellent.
Exactly the same as you. I think the one thing for me is don't compromise on your own ethics, and probably be proud of where you've come from. You know, I am not corporate 100%, you can see that obviously, but I won't change for people, and there's, I've stayed in employment for, you know, 10, 15 years in this industry for a reason, and I think sometimes it's backing yourself. The one thing I would say as well, if you're building into a utility career, mentoring is a massive, find someone within a company who you can bounce ideas off. I mean, we did some reverse mentoring around women in engineering, and what I've learned personally, you know, talking to people within the sector who are women, it's fantastic. I mean, constantly developing and finding interesting stuff. Accessibility for me, for example, you know, knew very little about that 5 years ago, obsessed with it now. And it's just continually thinking about the next step.
Yeah.
I think, but don't change your, you know,
yeah, good one.
How you was brought up for me.
Yeah. It's interesting. I feel like in the last series, I'm pretty sure it was your CEO that said something very similar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I listened to it on the way down, don't I? Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, it wasn't just him. A lot of them did, around surrounding yourself with people that know more and that type of thing. So, yeah. Well, thank you both. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really enjoyable.
Cheers.
Good. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Mind the Gap. We hope you gain valuable insights and inspiration from our conversation today. If you want to stay connected and continue bridging the skills divide, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favourite platform so you don't miss out on our upcoming episodes, where we'll bring you even more thought-provoking discussions with trailblazers who are shaping a brighter future. Remember, whether you're a student, a professional, or an organisation committed to inclusivity and growth, Mind the Gap is here to guide you on your journey. So until next time, keep your curiosity alive, keep learning, and keep bridging those gaps. Together, we can unlock the limitless potential within each and every one of us. Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. See you in the next episode.